Cape Talk.
This is John Matham on Afternoon Drive.
Sudan, the conflict continues. There have been ceasefires declared and not observed. The United Nations has most recently said that a further 334,000 people have been displaced within Sudan, but apparently there are slightly higher hopes at the moment of possible peace talks than was the case 48 hours ago. And the UN says that Sudan faces catastrophe, and inevitably that catastrophe moves into the neighboring countries like Mali and Eritrea, Ethiopia, perhaps southern Egypt as well. Professor André Dievenager is with Northwest University and joins us now from Potchefstroom. André, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John. Nice talking to you.
Signs of peace, do you see them?
Well, John, not easily. And if you understand the background of Sudan, and maybe we need to look at the background, then you will understand my skepticism to a certain extent. I think Sudan can be described as a failed state. It had a long history of conflict and violence, referring to military interventions, rebellions, civil wars among warlords, even revolution. And there were two recent civil wars, 1.5 million people killed in the Darfur region alone, 2 million people displaced. Since 1956, I believe that will be more or less the date of independence, there were 15 military coup d'etats in the country. Most of its contemporary history was under military control. It produces a leader like Omar al-Bashir, who was a very controversial figure, and we know him specifically in South Africa with regard to the International Criminal Court. So against that background, and if you look at the current patterns of violence, I think in a way ceasefires are ways of continuing the conflict by making use of other means.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose UN special envoys have a duty to sound hopeful, to at least create the possibility that things might happen. But Volker Perthes, who's the UN special envoy to Sudan, said late yesterday that the two sides, the army and the paramilitary rapid support forces, the RSF, have agreed to enter into talks to negotiate what he called a stable and reliable ceasefire, and that Saudi Arabia is a potential venue for those talks. I mean, it's a long way from the talks happening. It's a long way from something meaningful being declared, and it's an even longer way from whatever ceasefire might be negotiated holding. But if there are signs emerging from the two sides that they recognize that this can't continue interminably, maybe that's a minor positive?
Yes, I think this is at least a scenario that we can go the way of negotiations, creating a settlement and continuing. That is the same argument that is also the argument with regard to the conflict between Russia and the Ukraine. It cannot continue forever. At some point in time, people need to talk. But let's quickly summarize what is going on currently in Sudan. Now, the violence, the conflicting violence started 15 April 2023. 10 days later, about 559 people were killed, 4,000 wounded. On the one side, you had the paramilitary forces, the so-called, and you refer to it, rapid support forces of Mohamed Adan Dagalo, who attacked government buildings, fighting the de facto leader, Abdel Fattah al-Burhan. And the conflict between the generals took on the pattern of what we can refer as the fight amongst warlords. And it's about government positions, it's about resources, it's about territory. It takes on the form of airstrikes, the use of artillery, gunfire, and it's not only focused on Khartoum alone. It's influencing the whole Sudan. And if we look at Sudan is a country much bigger than the whole of South Africa. So it's a big part, and the conflict is rife specifically in the Darfur region. So yes, there are great challenges, but at the end of the day, and that is what the theory of conflict is telling us, at the end, people need to sit down and talk about their issues and see if they can get to some solution. And in a strange way, I can see this not too far ahead in South Africa's future as well. But that is not our debate. So yes, I agree, at some point we will be there. But at the moment, it's about military force. It's about violence in order to define a strategic position. More or less what Vladimir Putin is currently at this moment doing with regard to Ukraine and the possible use of a tactical nuclear arms in this context. It's about military strategy, but military strategy always ending up in some sorts of political negotiations.
Are there any international actors who have sufficient clout with either or both of the warring factions in Sudan to kind of knock their heads together and bring them to a negotiating table?
I think generally speaking, no one of these actors can operate in isolation. So yes, there will be international connections. You will see the involvement of an institution like the United Nations, who we know are already involved in the situation. But if you talk about nation-state actors, yes, the Americans has a certain level of influence there. The European Union has influences in that part of the world. The Russians has influence. The Chinese, you mentioned Saudi Arabia. And in most instances, the answer is starting developing on this level. And may I use the parallel again, the solution to the Russian-Ukraine conflict won't be defined by the parties involved directly, but by the actors in a way supporting the parties. I think this is more true to the Ukraine than is the case with Russia, but it is still a factor in that context. And that is what is it making it so controversial for Vladimir Putin to attend the BRICS summit in August in South Africa. The point I like to make is international influences are there, they have an influence, and they can be responsible for changing the scenario for the positive.
Thank you very much. Professor André Diewenacher seems to have left us, but I think we got the gist of it. Professor at Northwest University, and on the issue of Russia and Ukraine,